place to start. So I'm here with Freya Daly Sedgrove, playwright, poet, writer, and articulate feeler of feelings. Is there anything I missed in that description? Brackets, Freya's opportunity to add operative words about herself.
Operative words.
Yeah.
I don't have anything particular to add, but I thought it was really interesting that, like, I don't know, it took me like a really, really long time in a lot of poems to eventually feel comfortable calling myself a poet.
Yes.
And I still feel like a douchebag when I do, even though I'm like consciously trying not to feel like a douchebag when I do.
So how does it feel when other people label you as a poet? Second operative word.
Yeah,
after
I'm down
playwright.
To be called a poet, but playwright's an interesting one because I'm like, I'm not a playwright, but also I've totally written like 2 plays.
Yeah.
but also, articulate feeler of feelings is like the most. That's so kind that you
Thank
said
you.
That.
Yes.
And I feel really happy to be called that.
Well, I thought that besides all of the labels around like poet and playwright, in other terms like artist, because you could just like umbrella it. I could just say artist, and then people can make their own minds up. But basically, what it comes down to is
you're a painter.
No, definitely a feeler of feelings.
Yeah. That's
like,
it.
More than a poet and more than a playwright.
Right.
It's totally my shit. Am I allowed?
Yes, we can say whatever we want.
Cool. Because I'm also like a potty mouth.
Yeah. Bitch.
A bit.
That's
yeah,
not
bitch.
Like a swear word, but I just want to reclaim it. So, bitch.
Yeah, bitch.
So, welcome, Freya. Firstly, Daly Sedgrove. It's too perfect to not be pretend. Is that a pseudonym?
It's actually not.
It's actually not.
It's
like Sedgrove. 100%
my actual name.
Because I see your name written down and I just see like a swampy kind of forest, and it's sad. It's a sad grove.
It's a fucking sad grove.
Like, it's a very emotive last name to have.
It's so funny. Like, I used to be real embarrassed of it when I was a child, but less embarrassed of it than my sister is. But, like, I used to be... People would be like, oh, sad grove. Sad. And I'd be like...
Sad grove.
Sad used to mean dark in the olden days, which apparently my ancestors lived on a farm that was dark and like
so grovy. This is hence the name.
Yeah, but I'm like, fuck yeah, sad grove, Daly Sad. It's so accurate.
Yeah,
hilarious,
because you could put an I in, it would be like Freya Daly Sad Grove.
Yeah,
amazing.
Yeah,
I'm just fascinated. Anyway, so hi Freya, welcome.
Hi, thank you.
Before we begin, I want to do a weather report. Generally I look up what the weather's doing, but we can probably just
look out
the window.
Handy.
So, anyone estimate gauge on the temperature for today?
It's not that cold.
I'm going to say it's about 11 degrees.
11, 12, yeah, right about that. There's been like a low cloud ascending over Wellington for the last 2 days.
And now it's pissing.
Yeah.
But
it's
casually,
sort of,
it's
like,
not it's not
it's
as
like
bad
casually,
as it was this morning.
It's quite nice. It's misty, but
atmospheric.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, it is atmospheric.
The atmosphere.
So, I wanted to discuss with you, among other things, the play Citizen, which you wrote and performed for the 2016 New Zealand Fringe Festival. For those who did not have the opportunity to see it, Citizen ran for a week at the Vogelmorn Bowling Club earlier in the year. So I have a brief description that I've written.
Cool.
Would you like to give it a go at describing before I...
Sure. Would you like to do that, or do you want to...
No, you describe it first, and
okay.
then I'll go for what I've written down.
Okay.
Citizen, for those who were not privy to it during the performance.
Citizen, I really wanted to do a solo show, and for ages it was going to be a solo show until I realised that I'm too scared of, like hanging out by myself with myself is kind of like real full on, because I'm such a full on gal, and I needed help. So it's like it was like a pseudo solo show,
yep.
which is a solo show with other people in it.
Yes,
and
that's exactly what it was.
It
yes,
was
you're right.
Yeah, like it was all about me, but I just got I just enlisted help.
Yep.
But, yeah, so Citizen was about, it's set in a kind of dystopia.
I said it was, I'll dovetail into what you're saying, but I said it was set in what I would describe as the foreseeable future.
That's terrifying,
right?
That it's foreseeable.
It's
like, if like, maybe not factually the foreseeable future, but like emotionally, that could be the truth of it. Like, basically, it was about like making really literal the kind of struggle to prove yourself as having worth and like deserving to be alive, basically.
Yes, so I'll continue reading my description because also, Hana, you didn't see it, so this might help you gain insight into sort of what happened from my perspective anyway, so... I said, set in the foreseeable future, this two-person and one-machine play saw Callum Devlin as the interrogator and myself as a pre-recorded administration system taking interim citizen 91993307. That, don't quote me, that's not verbatim.
There's
it sounded wrong.
Zero.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, which was, the interim citizen was played by Freya. And basically the play takes her through this sort of abstract literal concept of the interim citizenship hearing, which basically meant Freya as the interim citizen appealed to an impartial jury, which was the audience, to prove she wanted to, or at the very least would continue to stay alive and become a permanent citizen of planet Earth. Yeah, so that was sort of basically the premise. And what I wrote was, in the opening scene, you quite literally showed every audience member certificates you had garnered in primary school and other material, personal ephemera from your childhood, for example. And showing everyone these objects of accomplishment, I'm reminded of the New Zealand-born poet Janet Frame's poem Prizes, which was published in The New Yorker in 1962. Are you familiar with the short story?
Not... I haven't read it, but I think you told me about it at the time.
Yeah.
And I was like, definitely going to read that.
But
haven't
didn't.
Because I'm busy with young adult
living and stuff. But basically, I think it happened a lot with the conversation I had with Sarah Tuck about the Offensive Nipple Show, where I sort of like drew out a lot of literary and theatrical associations.
Yeah.
That she may not have known she was... Not that she wasn't aware that she was making them, but I just think it's important. I mean, not to... It's no typecasting, but...
Everyone has a subjective experience to watching and engaging with something.
Yeah.
And you always have, like, different references that you can pull up, and it's kind of useful and helpful.
Totally.
I think, to make those connections.
Yeah, 100%.
Especially within a feminist practice referencing other women.
Yeah.
Where they seem to, there is a, I've written down more to explain the point of bringing it up, but there is a quite a literal connection between Frame's poem, which was, when you think about that to do with time frame, 62, 2016, it's been a while since she wrote that, but the concerns of women in Aotearoa to do with what she was speaking about like mental illness and trying to stay alive and validating oneself through prizes, which is what the poem is about.
Yeah.
The same. Nothing has... The consideration or maybe, like, the medium had changed, but the idea within both and the idea that you're both New Zealand-born women talking about these issues of womanhood is just fascinating.
Yeah.
That is sort of fascinating.
Yeah, I think she's a boss.
Yeah, I think she's interesting anyway.
Yeah. I'm kind of like less well read than I pretend that I am. But I feel like it's okay because I will eventually be well read. Like, I will eventually get around to reading more of these.
Really. Definitely do the poems and the short stories.
Yeah, well, I have
the novels can be a bit like.
I'm currently about a quarter of the way through Scented Gardens for the Blind, which is a beautiful, yeah. but also
raw.
And there's also Owls Do Cry. Yeah. But both are like, where am I in this? Like, yep. in the most serene way possible, her writing, and not unlike your play, does tend to, I think it just kind of throws me about.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like I'm from sentence to sentence, from page to page, especially from chapter to chapter. If I read too many one after another, it's the most invigorating experience, but I feel like I'm almost, like, getting left behind or lost a little bit, and I come out of the book being like...
An angel at my table.
Mm. Yes.
And then I went to, because I was living in Dunedin, so I went to Cherry Farm, which is Seacliff, which was the asylum that she was put in. Like,
wow.
Everyone knows the story of almost. And but the thing is like, not long after she moved out of there, that there was a fire and lots of the patients got stuck inside of it.
Really?
And now it's just like a ruin. But there's a garden that was planted by some of the inmates. And it's a nature reserve now, but there's a little plaque to Janet Frame being there. And I just read that and I was walking around just like feeling the weight of all of her words and her experiences. Like it was raw.
Yeah.
So I describe Janet Frame as raw.
Yeah. Just love it. But what I was saying was the similarity between your work and Frame's is the interrogation of prizes, awards you have received, the objects and yourself for their surmountable worth as a validation for life or being alive.
Yeah.
And in the same way, in prizes, it breaks down. There's this thing that happens where... this, not to like analyze Janet Frame while we're here to talk about your work, but there's this point where she gets given all of these validations or gives gifts to other people as a form of recognition, but something always goes wrong. Like she gets given a I think it's like a tennis racket from her father, which is she used money that she got for winning a prize in writing, and her father went and got her a tennis racket. But it was not the right colour, and everyone made fun of her for it. And there were sort of all these failings in the prizes themselves that sort of showed the prizes to be a little bit ridiculous.
Yeah, totally. It's like one of the prizes that I got in year 13 was the same prize as I got in year 12 for like the same, basically the same award, but for the next year. I was like, it was a penguin copy of Shakespeare's sonnets, and I was like, classic work, guys, but also, I've already got it because you already gave it to me. Like,
yeah, you're like, I know, and also no, Shakespeare.
But I've still got both copies because they have like a little thing in the front that says what prizes I got because I'm obsessed with prizes.
Yeah, so, okay, we're about to get into the juice. This is just all preamble. We're warming up.
Yeah.
So I'm fascinated, firstly, by the clever use of unrestrained self-analysis within Citizen. For instance, the interrogator played by Callum turns out to be, okay, just going to say it slowly, a physical manifestation or metaphor for your mind, or at least the parts of the mind, to my mind, that escalate to ask the often unanswerable, really big, bad, scary questions.
Yeah.
And then he kind of flips back and becomes Callum.
Yeah.
Anyway, but that's, you know. Did writing these thoughts down and turning them into Citizen, did playing them out serve as a cathartic process for you?
Yes, 100% it did.
In the writing or the acting out?
Both.
Both.
It's really interesting, actually, because I applied, like, I registered for Fringe before I'd written the play.
Yes.
And the play, I had a function for it in my head, like, I wanted to do this for me, because I'd just come out of a depressive episode, and I was like, fuck yeah,
crack it.
And I'm going to, like, this is me proving I deserve to live and I'm happy about it and I'm going to keep living.
Yeah, I'm going to make things in the world again.
Yeah, and then, like, had quite a sort of terrifying time after I'd sort of planned to write the play. Like, between planning to write the play and actually writing it, things kind of changed significantly for me in terms of, like, kind of in terms of my mental health and my attitude towards the whole thing.
Yes.
But totally, 100%, I was definitely, like, writing that play for therapy.
Yeah.
I was like, I gotta... And it's what you... It's the feeler of feelings thing, like, because that's always... I'm always going to be a feeler of feelings, but the thing for me is that I have to get them out in some way.
Yes.
And kind of writing stuff and performing stuff is the only way that I find sort of satisfyingly kind of...
It's the same in the production of my work. It's exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
It's like, have a feeling, make a thing.
Yeah.
And sometimes if I have a feeling and I don't make a thing, I'm almost a bit stunted by that feeling. I'm confused by it. I don't get to process it in a way that has a literal outcome. Even if it's not like it's like sidestepping to get, it's the longest way around to get to processing an idea.
Yeah.
And even the outcome isn't always perfect, or even what the feeling was initially. It's
but
not
at least
there to
you
show
did something
it. But
with the energy of that feeling.
Yes.
And sometimes, like, yeah, I've been thinking about this a whole lot because I'm real angry at the moment about some stuff.
Yep.
And I really, really need to get that anger out, and it's real weird with anger. Like, usually with sadness, I'm like, fuck yeah, I'm going to write a poem. I'm going to write a poem because I'm real sad.
Yeah.
But anger is like I probably write poems too, but it's a weirder thing because it's kind of less acceptable, you know, socially to be angry than it is to be sad.
Yes, absolutely.
And so, yeah, it's kind of like, if I don't do something with that feeling, then it kind of like turns back on me and fucks me up.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it fucks me up anyway because, duh.
Because
But it'll fuck me up way more.
Yeah.
You know. And so, I gotta do that. I gotta get it out. And it is all. It's totally all therapy. But my hope is that it's also there's more to it than that.
Yeah.
Like, that it becomes more than that once other people get to own it a bit
by
engaging with it in whatever way.
So what I sort of said about this idea that we're talking about is so the interrogator played by Callum, who turns out to be the physical manifestation of your mind in turmoil, basically, asks the big questions, and they build up as the play continues to the biggest question being, what is the worst thing you've ever done? There was an awareness of issues surrounding mental health, or more specifically, emotional and mental instability, turmoil, anxiety, and depressive and suicidal tendencies and actions. These are big, scary things too, and they're not spoken about, or in my opinion, when they are spoken about with a lack of sensitivity to the everyday lived experience of the person having these feelings.
Yeah.
How do you make yourself feel better or okay? Do you have any particular or personal self-care strategies? This is something
we
here at Local Stories and Cybernectar love to talk about. Because we like to talk about a depressive episode as much as the next gal.
Yeah.
But I also love to hear, like, but how do you make yourself feel better? Or what makes you feel good? You can just tell me what makes you feel good, if that's easier.
Yeah. Well... Oh, man, yeah. Like, I definitely have tactics when it's like, not manageable just in itself.
Yeah.
Like, bath. I need a bath.
Yeah.
Like, I can pretty much retreat to a bath. If I can retreat to a bath, then it's like, this will be okay. Like, I'm just going to ride it out from the bath.
Yeah. It's a very simple action as well, because you can just be like, run the water, do the action, just do this one thing.
Yeah.
You'll see that through. And then, look, there's a whole other things, and that's okay.
Yeah, so, but bath is like emergency procedure.
Yeah.
But kind of longer term, I... I read, and I read a particular kind of thing.
Which is?
Diana Wynne Jones.
Yes.
Is a writer. She's based, like, she's the best person.
Well,
I don't know, she's the best thing that has happened,
mm-hmm.
In my opinion.
Yes.
And I know a lot of good things have happened, but, but I'm pretty much like, but she's definitely, she's the best.
Okay.
She wrote my favourite book, which is House, Movie and Castle.
Yes.
And I read it when I was like 8, and then I just kept reading it, like every year. I read it every year because it's like home time. Gonna read Howl's now. And I read the sequels to it, of which there are 2. And I read those a lot too, but I was scared to read any of her other books because...
Just in case.
Because like, what if they didn't measure up and like I wouldn't get to hang out with my fave characters.
Yes, absolutely.
My friends.
Mm-hmm.
But then last year, when I was really, really depressed, I was like, fuck it, I gotta read her other stuff, because she's written like 40, 50 books. So this is like juvenile fantasy. This is
okay.
Fantasy for children.
Cool.
And it is such fucking good fantasy. In terms of like she writes magic really well.
Cool.
She can just do like any magic, and the magic in the different books that she writes, the different series, is all like self-contained and kind of like understandable. In the whole like the rules of fantasy, like a good fantasy is you know, complete within itself, like it makes sense within its own world.
Yeah.
And she's like that, and it is like the magic that she writes is so.
It's almost like a watertight universe in a way.
Yeah, but it's like she can, but it's different. She can do different types of magic, which is impressive in itself. Like writing any kind of magic in a way that's not like fucking irritating.
Yeah.
Is impressive. Mm. But she's got all these different worlds and these different universes. And so last year when I was real depressed, I was like, gonna read her other stuff
more.
And I think I'm up to like 31 of her books. I've read about 31 of her books. And it's like, seriously,
what was the title of the book that you read when you were 8?
Howl's Moving Castle
by
Diana Wynne Jones.
Get amongst that.
Yeah.
So slightly off topic, but your Twitter is something great to me. In a similar way to writing a play, Twitter or all social media posting is most often an insular process, something you do when you're alone for others to see as an outcome of having been left alone for too long, in my opinion.
We were talking today about how Twitter like tweets the poems.
Yeah, it's real. This is great. I want to talk about Twitter. Twitter's great.
Yeah, what do you want to say about Twitter? Just like throw the net wide at Twitter.
Okay. My Twitter is like, it's like my slam poem. Like, okay, and I, as a person, this is a controversial attitude. I don't like slam poems, generally.
Uh-huh.
I've only recently kind of articulated for myself why I don't like them, why they make me feel uncomfortable.
And why is that?
It's because, slam poems are completely attached to their writer-performer.
Sure.
Like, there's no separation, and so, with like, a slam poem, to put it really simply, I feel like I'm being, like, told a thing. I'm being, like, told a person, and, that's really hard to express.
No, I understand.
Like, slam poets... This is so, like, people are going to hate me for saying this.
We can go back to the Twitter topic. You don't have
to. But it's like part of it. It's like, it's very intertwined for me. And, like, obviously, maybe one day I'll change my mind. But
yes. Twitter's freeing.
Everything's fluid.
Yeah. And slam poems are freeing. I used to write in a really slammy kind of way. I used to write really slam-ish poems.
Mm-hmm, mm.
And also probably part of my discomfort with slam poetry is that it reminds me of stuff that I used to write that I don't...
Yeah.
You know, when you kind of...
Quite resonate with it anymore.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, a weird kind of romantic history with a form.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so I like poem that I can engage with on my own terms, and I don't feel like I'm ever allowed to engage with slam poems on my terms.
Mm.
But having said that, my Twitter is like my slam poem because I'm totally in there. That's like full me.
Yeah. Like this a lot is of what's fascinating about it is the how personal I can tell it is.
Yeah.
You know, there's a difference between how personal I think it is and how personal I can. When I read your tweets, I can almost hear you saying them, or I imagine you in a situation where you're, like, standing somewhere and, like, having a thought and then tweeting it. Like, I see the...
Quite often sitting on the toilet.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I see the person. Yeah. It's fucking amazing. Yeah.
I'm always tweeting from the toilets at work.
Yeah.
Need a break.
I need to tweet something. Yeah. Yeah, like, I need to say something.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like... very important outlet for me, and also kind of a like teen girl diary, and like a line dump for me, like I write down kind of ideas that I haven't fully like got to the end of yet,
that I want actualized to keep, it
and
you want to put it down somewhere so you can look back at it later and say,
I fucking love reading my Twitter.
What was this thought I had? Yes,
my reading my Twitter is like something I spend quite a lot of my time doing.
I like that.
Because it's all, but it's like, I'm like, mostly real interested, because I tweet things in the moment, kind of. And
yes.
And they're usually things that I'm like, this is significant for me at this time, and try articulate it here, and then it's just like little garden of my thoughts.
Yes.
And it helps me to kind of like stay connected to like my own sort of growth of ideas. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah.
Yeah. What's an archive? But also
everyone gets like, and then people sometimes favourite things, and it's just like fucking ego boost. I love that.
Yeah. Also that, and you're like, thank you.
Yeah.
It's not the same. It kind of means more than the, like, gratification of, say, Facebook.
Yeah, fuck yeah. Because fuck yeah.
Jesus, can you imagine saying half the things you pop off on Twitter on Facebook?
I first got Twitter, I was still, like, full kind of huge discomfort with myself because I was like, I had to, I have this head girl complex because I was very, I kind of killed it at high school.
Yeah, peaked in high school.
Yeah, or like I peaked in kind of in the view of everyone else. At high school. I was very conscious of the fact that everyone was like, man, Freya's doing so well at this time, way more than they are now.
Yeah, oh no.
And so for ages, but also when I was in my last year of high school, I was like, fuck, I've got to be perfect and fun and lovely for everyone all the time.
Yes, that
and like also like accepted all these friend requests from people who just went to my school because I've got to be cool for everyone.
Everyone.
I've got to invite them in. I've got to be approachable. And I've got to be happy all the time.
Yeah.
It took me ages to like, I don't know. Yeah. I kind of needed Twitter as a place to be.
Twitter's so supportive as well.
Yeah. To be like actually kind of honest and
people,
and
other to people, other articulate feelers of feelings.
Yeah. Mm. Like it's just a fucking relief. Like it's more that, yeah, it's totally more than an ego stroke. It's a total relief to have like a sad funny tweet favorited by someone else who is like a sad girl.
You're like, that's right. We had that thought.
Twitter. Yeah.
Yeah. So basically, I have two more questions, and then we're going to do 10 fun questions, which is a game to round off the podcast, which is fun and full of questions. In the script, you reference the play within itself, directly saying this is sort of when the script starts to break down and you become Freya dealing with some thoughts, and Callum becomes Callum, also dealing with the thoughts.
Me dealing with the thoughts.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you say no one is going to say this needed to be written.
Yeah.
If no one asks you, this is more like I'm just being like totally projecting, but this is a question I have myself. Like if no one's asking you or forcing you to write or to do something or to make something, what keeps you writing? Or I guess you were saying you came out of a depressive episode and you felt the need to not make a proclamation about the idea that you were like, it wasn't that you were fine, is that you were just continuing.
Yeah.
So is that sort of the reason why you wrote it, or what makes you write? Is it having a feeling and then needing to have something to do with it?
But yeah, basically, like, it's yeah, it's weird. There's a lot of, like, people always talk about the reasons for writing. Like, writers are always talking about why they write. And a lot of people talk about it as being a necessity, like a compulsion. And definitely, I feel like I have to write things. I read a cool interview with Hera Lindsey Bird, because all interviews with Hera Lindsey Bird are cool.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, yeah, if I was the only person left in the world, I'd probably stop. I wouldn't write poems. I'd just be, like, reading Agatha Christie novels and watching TV and stuff. And I was like, yeah, fuck yeah. But also, I probably would still, like, oh, it's fucking weird. I can't really imagine it, because I'm so desperate for approval as a person, as everyone is.
Everyone wants to be validated.
I want to be fucking loved. I want to be, like, adored and kind of worshipped. That's, like, my goal.
This was a bit in The Citizen.
Yeah, I have
this directly.
I have a note up on my above my bed that's, like, an idea for a sequel to Citizen, which is, instead of just, like, applying to be allowed to keep living, it's, like, it's called Immortal, and it's applying for a position as a god. where, like, you know, once you've proved that you deserve to be alive, what about after that if you, like, prove that you're fucking so fucking special?
Yeah.
Like, you're so special that you deserve to be alive, but even then you're so fucking special that you deserve to just fucking live forever. That's an idea I have. I don't know if it will ever...
There's a lyric in a Nicki Minaj song, I don't know which one, you might be able to help me out here, but it's sort of like a rap breakdown in one of the songs, and literally the line is, this is very abstract, I'm throwing this net so wide, but she says, what's the point if I'm God? But then she also says, double D up, ho, Dolly Parton. But the part where she says, like, what's the point if I'm God?
Yeah.
Is such a huge proclamation, or it's just an interesting concept.
Yeah.
You think about you know, how Kim and Kanye were looking into becoming immortal.
Yeah.
They're investing in, like, their technology.
Yes.
I love that. I love everything about that. Like, this.
Well, there was that speculation about Walt Disney freezing himself.
Yeah.
Know what I mean? Like, that's just the contemporary day version.
Yeah. Mm. I'm just like, I think, in terms of writing as a compulsion and a necessity, yes, it is. But that is totally tied up with the fact that I live in a world full of people
who write.
So I need poetry because I need people, and I also need does that fuck? I don't know.
I think so. I think I like that as an answer anyway.
Okay, cool.
I agree.
I gotta do it, and because I really want people to love me for it.
Yeah.
And I, you know, who knows if that'll happen, but I'm just gonna keep trying.
Yeah.
Like we were talking about before, I'm gonna try be cooler all the time.
I always have this sort of, like, argument with myself internally when I'm making work. And, you know, it's this strange process where you're standing on a hill alone with your shoes off with a video camera in the rain.
Yeah.
Filming yourself, being like, this is definitely worth it.
Yeah, well, it's like...
Like, I'm having an experience. Exactly. But at the same time, I'm not only having an experience, I'm having the experience of preemptively being excited to show other people,
yeah,
like sometimes the joy in making work isn't in the making, it's of the sharing.
Yeah.
And it's not that other people ask you to do it. It's almost better for them that they didn't have to ask, and then they're like, that's really interesting.
Because as soon as you go, like, as soon as you start, like, getting anxious about, like, who cares if I do this or not?
Yeah.
Because no one does care.
Yeah.
Like, you
and
can't,
that's
you
fine
can't be,
too.
Yeah, you can't be. Yeah, you kind of have to go, who cares? No one else. I care
a lot
whether or not I do this.
Yeah.
And so, and it, like, fuck, it's great to care.
Yeah.
Like, caring about stuff is like, it makes you worth other people caring about you because you care about shit. It's like, what? It's like, what else
and
would
also
you do?
It's, I think it's also like care in the face of adversity in the way that you're sort of taught, like, whatever, or...
Yeah, caring about stuff is like a protest.
It's real, like, when you start talking passionately about something, people sometimes get a bit scared. They're like, how can you care? That must take, like, a lot of time and energy. I'm like, it really does, like, almost all of it to care about these things.
That's great.
Yeah, caring is important. So in the play, as we've established, you ask yourself some big questions. So I'd like to end this podcast by asking you 10 smallish ones.
Cool, hit me.
Yeah. All right. One, what's your star sign?
Aquarius.
Yeah.
Do you
okay.
know
No, I don't. I don't know things like that.
Find out what time you were born.
I was born at like 9 a.m.-ish.
Yeah, find out what time you were born and where.
Uh-huh.
Just go on the internet.
This is
natal
so great. It's like how
well, we can have you on for a second podcast where you can just explain your natal chart to us.
Okay, sweet.
Like, we won't even introduce you next time. It'll just be, like, cuts in, being, like, Aquarius, Sun, Ascending, Moon, and we'll just go from there. We could even get, like, an astrologer in, maybe.
That would
fortune
be.
Teller, I don't know. We could...
Yeah, something. Like
just something.
Yeah.
Cowboys or astronauts?
Astronauts.
Yeah. Autumn or winter?
Ooh, autumn. Oh, that's a tough one.
She's tricky.
It's a sneaky one.
All you see, or all I see in my mind is when someone's like autumn, winter, especially when you set them up like that against each other, I just see crumpled brown leaves on the ground or snow falling.
Yeah,
so I just pick from one of those two very, very extremes.
It's real funny though, because like that's not what autumn and winter are like, sort of.
They're not like that in New Zealand, but for some reason
well,
I just...
Not here.
Yeah, not in Wellington.
Not in Wellington.
But I think I quite like a Wellington autumn, actually.
Yeah, do love an autumn. The light...
Still going to the beach in autumn.
Yeah.
It's warm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you could beat... This is the question that I just love.
Yeah.
Everyone generally. We've got a very interesting answer from Elijah who came on. Sarah gave it a hoon. Lots of people have answered this question very well. Just
okay.
No pressure.
Okay.
If you could be anyone for one day, who would you be, why, and what would you do? So start with the who would you be, and then we can work our way in.
I would want to be someone real different to myself. I'd probably want to be a boy.
Classic. Empath.
I'd want to be...
just for one day.
Yeah, just one day. That's so... Oh, my God. Got to make the most of it. I think I'd, like, want to be someone I don't know, but a boy. Like, a total stranger who I don't know.
Okay, just a stranger.
Yeah.
Why?
Why? Because, like, I'm reasonably perceptive, and
just
I can get... like, if I meet people... Like, hang out with people. If I know people, then I can get, you know, some measure of a glimpse into them.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, definitely fascinating to be anyone else, but I think I'd definitely want to be a full stranger. And definitely...
Just for the learned experience?
Yeah, totally.
Or just for the new experience?
Just to learn... yeah, I guess I'd want to be a stranger, but I'd want to be a stranger who's different to me, because obviously there are lots of strangers who are the same as me.
Yeah, who could be similar.
I'd probably want to be, like, maybe I'd want to be like an asshole dude, or like,
yeah,
like a Bukowski type.
Probably, yeah, like just like a
fuck boy,
like a fuck boy, or maybe even like a, oh fuck, like like Jacob Coote from like can you be fictional people?
Yeah, you can meet anyone for a day.
I think I'd want to be Jacob Coote.
Who's that?
He's like kind of the sweetheart love interest in Looking for Ella Brandy, which I'm reading again at the moment.
Yes.
Like, he's a cool... Yeah. Like, just like a really cool... I probably want to be kind of hot, like a really hot dude.
Yeah, definitely hot.
Like, big and, like, easeful and kind of, like... No, I have to... not like, someone who's... Be interesting to be someone who doesn't, like, worry about everything. Yeah, I'd want to be Jacob Coote.
Yeah.
Yeah, at the moment, that's
I think...
Confident and...
I think it would be interesting as well, specifically picking to be a man, which is, like, not something that would ever cross my mind to do, or has never in approaching this question.
Uh-huh.
But it would be fascinating because of the way people would react to you.
100%.
And especially if you manage to, like, continue on your, like... Freya mentality in the background, but still being able to see through the lens of the way this person feels and thinks and perceives. That would be amazing.
Yes, it fucking would. And
the idea of, like, you might even walk into, like, a bar and not be concerned about your physical safety.
Yeah.
Your first thought might be, like, I could beat up all of you, as opposed to all of you are going to hurt me all at once.
Yeah.
But really, I'm just going to get a G&T and sit down.
Yeah.
You're just not having to deal with the gaze. Like, I've recently realised how tense it is, because, I mean, I was in a relationship for 3 years, and I think that kind of cocooned me.
Yeah, it does. It takes you away.
And then walking down the street now, I'm just aware of men looking at my body.
Right.
Because it's that sort of double... It's not like a double standard, but it's when you're with him, this is from the experience of being a queer woman, it's real cool how it's been, like, sexualized in the media anyway, but when you have men around, other men tend to respect the men that you're with, so they won't go near you, but as soon as you're left alone, it's like eyes on you. But I specifically learnt this from, like, the idea of, you know, if you're alone, you get that, but when you're two women alone together, you're so alone. Does that make any sense? Like, it almost, like, amplifies the idea that you're vulnerable.
Whoa, that's real interesting.
A zing, zing, zing. But we're not going to talk about that. That's just a take-home. That's just an idea to think about. What would you do? Yeah.
Like, definitely sex and masturbation would be on the list.
I feel like this is everyone's thing.
100%.
This is like...
You want to see what sex is like for other people? It's like, of course you do.
But this is like always the answer.
But also, imagine having a penis. That would be so weird and hilarious.
Is there that film, is it the something gigolo or something in the sky?
Gigolo, male gigolo. Oh, I think you mean the
hot chick. What women want?
I don't know. But this exploration of the idea of, like, swapping bodies and then the man and the woman being, like...
And, like, being John Malkovich. Yeah. Kind of thing. But it's, like, it's, like, how sometimes you hear, like, kind of that thing of dudes saying, yeah, if I had boobs, I'd play with them all the time.
No, you wouldn't.
But also, if you had boobs for one day,
you would.
And if I had a penis for one day, I'd be, like, this is very interesting.
Yeah. I'm also having experience.
I would also, like... I don't know, it's just 24 hours, it's not enough time.
Yeah.
But I'd, like, do lots of body stuff. I'd probably, like, do some drugs.
Yeah.
See what, like, real sensory things are like in a different body. And then maybe, like,
You're just in for the experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do some of that ASMR stuff in another body.
Yeah. So, question number 5. Describe a moment, event, thing, or person that has recently made you sad or makes you sad. We're going to perk it up after this, but I thought it's always good to talk about it.
Okay, yeah, got it. Oh, fuck. I was in the, like, cafe restaurant bit of a mountain. I recently went on a ski trip.
Yes.
And there was a guy there, and I didn't know how old he was. I couldn't tell. He could have been, like, between 20 and 30, basically.
Yeah.
And he was by himself, and he wasn't wearing ski gear or anything. I thought that he maybe worked there.
Yes.
And he was eating a steak sandwich.
Yes.
And he was at the table next to me and my mum and my sister. And I was like, really, like, oh, I just really felt real sad when I saw him. Which is like, I have this weird thing. And I think it's like a sympathy bias or something. It's like, like that person eating alone doesn't necessarily need your sympathy. Like, they could just be
like eating. They're fine. Yeah, they're just hungry.
But I pretty much always feel sad when I see people eating by themselves. I think it's
jump
something
to the
about,
conclusion that it's sad.
Kind of, yeah, which is like a shitty thing about my personality. But it's a reality.
It is what it is. Yeah.
But also, I think it's the act of eating, like, is so weird.
And I find it almost demoralizing.
Yeah.
Sometimes. Well, it's not demoralizing because it, like, literally points to your... I think it's because it literally points to your need to survive. It points to immortality so... to mortality.
Yeah.
Unless you're like Kim and Kanye and you're already immortal. It points to mortality so strongly that I understand why you would go there.
Anyway, yeah. I felt sad, and I desperately, desperately wanted to talk to him, but also didn't want to talk to him because I didn't want to assume that he felt lonely.
Yes. But nevertheless, a sad experience.
Yes.
Yeah. I have those all the time.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm fine. I'll just be walking to work and I'll literally see, like, a bird.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's so sad.
Yeah.
And there's no reason for it. It's not even specifically eye-catching or beautiful or anything that should have attracted me to the idea of it or sadness. My brain just goes...
Right. Yeah.
That's so fucking
somehow
sad.
I saw a water bottle floating in a big puddle today.
That's sad.
So
that's
sad. Sad. Like, that's so
like,
sad.
That's, God. That's how I feel today.
Yeah, that's so sad. That's like...
Yeah. But I think objects that are sad are, like, kind of an okay kind of sad.
It's like...
People that make me sad are not my kind of okay sad. As soon as I get sad at a stranger, I'm
like... It was
like
badness sad.
That's, yeah.
It doesn't feel good. Are we going to flip this over? Because...
Yes. So describe a moment, event, thing, or person that has recently made you happy.
Okay. Same thing.
Yeah.
The guy turned to us and started talking to us. And, like, I was so, his name was Bjarne, he was this fucking lovely dude. He was a Māori dude from, I think he said he was from Tauranga, but he was studying down in Invercargill, and he was up on a trip there with people from SIT, is that what it's called?
Mm-hmm.
Like lots of them were all skiing, but he was like, it'll just be a waste of money because I'm not fit and I don't know how to ski.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just this fucking, he was such a sweetheart, and he was like asking us all these questions about, like our family. He was like, you guys are you're such a lovely family, about my mum and my sister and I, which I just thought was like such a nice thing to say.
Mm.
Because we are. And his name was Bjarne. He pronounced it Bjarne. And I was like, oh, what's that name? Where's that from? And he was like, oh, it's actually like Scandinavian or something. I was like, fuck, like Bjarne is the name of is my great grandfather's name.
Oh my God, adorable.
And like Freya and Lisa, my name and my sister's name, are Norwegian.
Mm.
And so he was like this dude who was just like there, and he was obviously. So then I felt okay because I feel like he definitely was like this wonderful people person, and he definitely needed people, and that was
he wanted it. Yeah,
that was hopefully why, like, hopefully my sadness that I felt when I saw him sitting there eating a steak by himself, it was like not completely misplaced, because it was like this guy is obviously
he's actually
meant to
a
be people,
people person.
Yeah,
he had that energy
and
about
he was
him.
Just this warm, lovely dude, and he. And I just felt so good. And then he said, like, you guys have just been a ray of sunshine in my day. I was like, fucking same. Like, same.
Thank you. Tell me that. Give me my positivity. That's so good.
I felt, it was like the depths and the heights.
And you were just getting lunch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Four more questions.
Okay. I'll try to be fast. Sorry.
No, I love it. Tell me, or Hannah, or both of us, something we don't know.
About anything?
This is kind of like this is a question that sort of, I guess it's, yeah, it would be easier if it were about you personally, because I might not know it. Okay. Because, and also it's sort of like a judgment of like how smart you think I am.
Oh my God,
you know?
That's so interesting.
Because you could say something really, and I'd be like, I do not.
Fuck, yeah.
I do know that.
Yeah, that happened to me, you say. Something that you don't know.
It's like a critique of mansplaining.
Yeah, well, I was just going to... I tweeted about this yesterday, actually. Mm. My boss told me how to Google yesterday, which took me aback. I was like, I know how to Google.
Well, that was something I didn't know. I didn't know your boss tried to mansplain to you about how to Google. Amazing.
Yeah.
Favourite day of the week? Mine is Tuesday. Do you have a favourite day of the week?
Sunday.
Yeah. Sunday's like a class favourite.
Yeah. Thursday.
Thursday's a pretty neat.
Yeah.
Thursday.
Yeah,
I think that's the thing. It's like, tomorrow's going to be Friday and tomorrow I'm going to feel awesome.
Yeah. Like, Thursday's like, you hang out for the, like, for Friday and Saturday, but you can kind of like get lots of stuff done because no one's like bugging you about it being the weekend, and the social implication to go and find people and do something isn't really there on a Tuesday or a Thursday, but for instance it may be on a Wednesday, Friday, Saturday. That's why you like Sundays. That's why I like Sundays anyway. Water or fire?
Water. I'm a pyrophobe.
Yeah, good. See, I'm more of a fire gal, but who is your favourite author or playwright at the moment, and what should we be reading of theirs? Back to the, like, feminism reference other woman artists. Just anything. It could even be an article on Stuff, if that's what you're into.
No, basically, I just think everyone should read... Like, but everyone already is. I was about to say...
Can you say it again? Because I haven't.
We were just talking about Hera Lindsay Bird being a viral sensation. But, like obviously, read her poems. But, like, reading her interviews... And everyone's already doing it because they're fucking all over the internet.
Everyone's all over the internet.
But, honestly, like, every single one of her interviews adds to, like... She's so fucking
the depth
smart.
Of her character.
But it's, like... But it's not just the depth of her character. Like, her talking about herself helps everyone to understand themselves.
Perfect.
And if we all understand ourselves better, then we will all feel better and be better to each other.
Yes.
I'm in love with Hera.
Okay.
Yeah.
So just interviews by
Hera
Lindsay Bird.
Interviews with Hera Lindsay Bird.
Yeah.
What a book you can borrow, Jordana.
Okay. Can I have that?
You can borrow it.
Yes, naturally. Yeah, of course. Yes, I would like to have that. That'd be great. Give it a little read.
Yeah. I'm a pretty big fangirl.
Cool.
Her interview on ID was like one of the best interviews I've ever read on ID.
Really?
Just, like, there's so many bad interviews on there, and it was so good.
What was she saying in particular that was so good?
She says new things each time, which in itself is impressive because she's like doing interview after interview because she's a pop star.
But it still becomes, it's still interesting and relevant and
syncopated. Like, I mean, I don't know if she just has all this knowledge already and is just, like, parceling it out in all these interviews. Or
true.
If the interviews themselves are, like, or if she just...
Sort of rehearsed,
you know, speaks and, like, has these thoughts at the time and just... I don't know, but, like...
Whatever it is, it's good.
It makes me feel way more... All these interviews make me, as a person, me by myself, distinct... from anything, like, feel more powerful and able to just do stuff I want to do. I don't know. And it's, like, that's not always what she's talking about, but the way that she talks about anything makes me feel like that.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
I think I've got a plan for tonight. Read some here, Lindsay Bird. ID. Love it. Well, it was lovely having you here, Freya.
I just feel great.
And thank you so much. Signing off. Goodbye.
Bye.